This podcast is featured on the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Hey folks, Cowboy T here, and welcome back. This episode will, like others, focus on both liberals and the right to keep and bear arms. I welcome you to Episode 7. It's now December 2012, and I'm still hearing a bunch of conversation in the aftermath of Democratic President Barack Obama's successful re-election campaign over former Massachusetts Republican Governor Mitt Romney. And some of it, I must say, has given me pause for concern. Let's talk about that for a moment. You listen to a lot of the talking heads on TV and the radio, you know there are two camps, the liberals and the conservatives. Each side thinks the other is the enemy, the devil incarnate, it seems. The folks from either side seem to reject any meaningful interaction with each other. I consider this stupid, unreasonable, and beneath us as Americans. We're better than this, or at least we're supposed to be. One of the biggest criticisms we as liberals, though, have of the fundamentalist and evangelical Christian movement is, well, we do see it as hypocritical because far too often those who call themselves Christians sure don't act like Christ himself. Christ didn't hate anybody. But we see far too many of them expressing what looks to me like straight-up hatred of anybody, not like them. I've talked with many of you fellow liberals out there, in person and online. You've said this in my presence. You said it on both liberal and conservative-oriented gun boards, and you've got a point. I've seen it right along with you. Mahatma Gandhi put it like this. I like your Christ. I don't like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ. And he had a point, too. Still does. Nobody likes those who play that holier-than-thou posturing of do-as-I-say-not-as-I-do game. Unless it's someone from their team, of course. I point this out to them here and there, and they generally react in the expected hostile fashion. Seems they don't like it when those liberals call them out on their hypocrisy. Likewise, though, my fellow liberals, what about you? You want people to start thinking in more of a liberal fashion? Well, okay. But what kind of example are you setting? What are you doing to make liberalism, real liberalism, more attractive to more people who currently don't believe in it? Are you comporting yourself in a rational fashion when you encounter people who aren't necessarily like you? Are you polite to them? Or do you insult them? When you speak of them, do you insult them? There's all this post-election talk now about how white males are irrelevant. Seems the hate is on, and for years has been, about anything male, and especially if the male is white. I gotta ask you, when we do this, are we really acting liberal? Are we really being inclusive like we claim so loudly that we supposedly are? I have to wonder. Here's something from a supposedly liberal person. I can't tell this person's sex or so-called race, on a liberal-oriented gum board. Quote, what you're seeing there right now with the doomer gloomers is the death throes of the old white male demographic. Society moves forward. Close quote. Oh, there's this gem by a feminist white woman. Quote, it's time for the D student white guys to realize that going against everyone else in this country isn't such a good idea. I realized I just asked a D student white guy to realize something. Close quote. Wow. Two great examples of inclusiveness there. Way to go. Oh, and here's a piece from an article I read a short time ago. This is by a fellow named Tom Skorka. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, sir. Quote, white men are supporting Mitt Romney to the exclusion of logic or common sense in defiance of normal Americans. Whoa, close quote for just a second. Normal Americans? Whoa, excuse me? Well, okay, he continues. Quote, without this narrow tribal appeal, Romney's candidacy would simply not be viable. Most kinds of Americans see no reason to vote for him. Close quote. This fellow then goes on this major tirade about how bad white men are. Now, some who are aware of who he is might say, oh, but Tom Skorka's a white guy himself. So what? What's that got to do with the price of tea in China? I remind these folks who believe this, many of you have called Clarence Thomas anti-black, but he's a black guy. So how do you reconcile that contradiction? Here, I'll do it for you. It's that it doesn't matter what color or sex someone is when it comes to racial or sexual prejudice. There are white men out there who, like many white women and folks of various racial minority groups, are apparently anti-white guy. Just like, you know, it's like just because you're white and male, you're automatically a scumbag nowadays. And guess what? That's no good either. Oh, don't believe me? Don't believe that's what's going on? Look at how we as a society talk about white men. We don't even call them white men. Ooh, we call them white males. Can't even bring ourselves to call them men. However, we don't refer to females that way. Oh no, we don't typically refer to minorities and females. No, the female adult human is called a woman, but the male adult human is not called man, especially if he's white. Anything but a man, huh? Oh gee, I guess old Abe Lincoln wasn't a man. Neither was the recently deceased jazz legend Dave Brubeck, eh? Let's see. How about Chief Justice Earl Warren? Nope, guess not him either. Same must apply to Ben Franklin, Patrick Henry, George Mason, John Quincy Adams, President Jimmy Carter, Governor Gary Johnson. Nope, just a bunch of white males, not men. Yeah, that's too bad. I rather thought those were pretty cool guys. And when I worked for the school system, I saw this bias over and over again, too. Oh, white male bad, everyone else good. And white male school teachers felt professionally pressured by their bosses to teach this bias. I don't need to imagine how they felt. Remember, I worked with them, so I just walk over and ask them. Didn't have to wonder or guess. Only when they trusted me, which, I'll tell you, took some time, did some brave ones reveal their real feelings about that. Namely, they didn't like it one bit. Their outer voices may have said, oh, rah, rah, to avoid getting de-staffed during the lean times. All you teachers out there know what de-staffing means. It's not good. You're basically in fear for your job. But their inner voices were saying, hey, what the hell did I do to deserve this disparagement? And we wonder why so relatively few men go into teaching. Yeah, I know. Those white males are getting a dose of their own medicine now, right? Ah, jeez. How many times have I heard that spiteful attitude before? Folks, I'm not a Christian. I don't want to be. But for a moment, I'm going to pull a little bit from Jesus Christ on this one because he had a point. I'm sitting here with the Holy Bible right here in my hand. It's my mom's Bible. It's got a older sort of a semi-leather-ish black cover, whatever you call the stuff. It looks sort of like leather. I first picked it up and started reading it when I was about 4 years old. Now, you know how in some Bibles Jesus' words are printed in red ink to symbolize the blood of Christ? This Bible doesn't have that. So at 4 or 5 years old, I decided I'd remedy that problem with a red marker and color the pages where Jesus spoke. I learned Mom didn't much care for that. But that was nearly 40 years ago. I still have that Bible, obviously. Kept it all these years. Don't worry, what I'm about to read to you is not very long at all. It's even pro-woman. Here we go. St. John chapter 8, verse 1. Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives. Olives. That sounds pretty good so far. I like olives. And early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. Ooh, that doesn't sound good. And when they had set her in their midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. Oh, that's not good. But what sayest thou? This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down, and with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he heard them not. So, when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Folks, we talk about casting the first stone a whole lot in our society. Many of us liberals are quick to accuse folks of that. You know, casting the first stone? But are we ourselves not following that same counsel from that passage? Aren't we acting just as hypocritically as those we accuse? I think Jesus himself would say yes to that. And that's something we need to improve on. So, let's take a little break for station ID, and we'll get into how to do just that.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.
Okay, we're back. We just got through talking about how maybe we are not following our own rule to follow the golden rule. I just got through talking about something Jesus said about cast the first stone. Now, again, I'm not a Christian, but you know what? When the man's right, he's right. He's got a point. So we're going to get into how to improve our own issues with following that advice. So here we go. Instead of denigrating white males and speaking of them like they're the plague, how about this? We remember, instead, that there are jerks from all so-called demographics. All of them, folks. Every one. Case in point, this happened just yesterday at work. Just yesterday. A firearms instructor team of a black man and a white woman came in to teach some students. They're regulars. We like them. They come all the time. We'll call them Bill and Sarah. Bill was on the range doing the instruction, and Sarah was back in the observation area with us, doing the schmoozing part, as she put it, and we all got a chuckle out of that. As time went on, I asked how the students were doing. And Sarah made a bit of a snitty crack about, women are always better than men, ha ha. Well, actually, that's not true, because I myself outshoot a whole lot of people I encounter, both male and female, including a couple of FBI agents. And I think we all know Jerry Michalek is the greatest revolver shooter on the planet. It's really about practice, folks. But I wasn't going to confront her on that in front of other potential students. I didn't see the need for that. But I did later catch both Bill and Sarah off to the side briefly, and I quietly called her on that. I pointed out that, look, if I made a crack about women, you wouldn't have liked it, right? She kind of grudgingly admitted, no. Probably because her boss, Bill, a black man, by the way, was standing right there. I let the situation end, and I went back onto the range. I'll tell you this, I was actually considering getting some tactical training from them. And who knows, I still might. But if so, it'll be with Bill, not Sarah. And here's the thing, right up to that point, I'd used to think she was a cool person. Actually, if I have to deal with her, I won't do it. See what snarky cracks get you? She turned an ally. Me, against her, and possibly her company. It's just like how some of these racist gun store owners put up their signs saying, if you voted for Obama, then your money is no good here. Yeah, I'm sure you all have heard about some reports about that going on. How crazy. Well, apparently to Sarah, if you're a white man, a male, you're just not as good as everyone else. And here's the thing. Since I know her, I also know that she'd be among the first to protest, probably directly to my boss, if I had come at her in anything representing a similar fashion. Do as I say, not as I do? Folks, that cuts both ways. Jesus Christ was the ultimate liberal. So was Mahatma Gandhi. Both men believed in the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. Now, I'm not saying we've all of a sudden got to do a bunch of group hugs with any white guy in the street and sing kumbaya. No. Rather, just do as the golden rule says. I'll say it again. Do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. Yeah, that includes white men. By the way, this has other benefits too, especially with regard to the Second Amendment. Let's face it, folks. Most expert marksmen in this country are white men. I've gotten to know several of them. One of them is an Oklahoma boy who speaks fluent German. Oh, and he's married to an incredibly beautiful woman originally from Eastern Europe. They've been happily married for years. He's not former military, but this guy's a sniper-quality shooter nonetheless. When he speaks, I'm a sponge. This dude's a walking encyclopedia when it comes to reloading and rifles. He's good enough that when he drops a deer for the freezer, he goes for neck shots and drops that deer cleanly right there virtually every time. He does this, he explains, to preserve the most meat. Oh, and because he knows he can make the shot. He also does his own butchering. Yep, he processes his own deer. Like I said, I'm a sponge when he speaks, and I've learned a lot from him. Oh, but he's a white male. How can he be any good? Aren't folks like him irrelevant now? Huh. Here's another one. James Amel Smith White of California. With another fellow named Dan Scott, he runs the AmelSmith.com reloading site, where I learned a lot of stuff. Highly recommended site, by the way, AmelSmith.com. If the aforementioned Oklahoma boy is an encyclopedia, then Amel Smith is the Great Library of Alexandria. Oh, yeah, he's a white guy, too. Yep. I've talked about Mosin Nagant before on the Liberals' Gun Corner. The fellow who got me into those guns? You know, those $100 .30 caliber Milsurp rifles that even give the .30-06 some competition? Yep, another white guy. Oh, and an evangelical Christian, too. And a VCDL member. That's Virginia Citizens Defense League. Yeah, that's it. It's his fault. I get it now. How dare I associate with people who would steer me toward a bargain like that? It's that white male's fault, I tell you. And worse yet, I'm still friends with him after he did that to me. Ah, well, I guess I just associate with the wrong crowd, huh? I must not have gotten enough of those anti-white guy genes in me. You want to learn marksmanship? Odds are you're getting that knowledge either directly or indirectly from a white guy. So, since this is the Liberals' Gun Corner, I'm here to tell you that it can benefit you to listen to the white guys. You actually might learn something beneficial. And there's another thing. Folks, a central tenet of proper liberalism looks at people's actions, not their skin color or their sex or their religion. Are there white men who are still bigoted Confederacy worshipers? Well, sure, of course there are. I meet them all the time at gun shows, and their attitudes disgust me. Likewise, there are many white women who seem to hate anything male. There are blacks of either sex who seem to just totally hate anything not black. Huh, how many black women used to tell me I ain't black enough for them? I stopped counting that back in the 90s. How many East Asians, and specifically Koreans here I'm talking about, have treated me like dirt when I've gone into their stores to shop and, spend my money there? How many Latinos have called me gringo estupido and other insults, which I won't repeat here, because they thought I couldn't understand what they were saying? Folks, not only did I grow up in California, I also spent 2 years of my adult life in Spain. Yes, I do know what those insults mean. And yeah, some folks still spew that garbage to this day. Happened again just last month. You should have seen the looks on their faces when I responded, "Ah, sí, que tengo un buen día." Now I ask you, is any of this, what you just heard, really liberal behavior? I contend that no, it's not. We're supposed to be better than this. Liberalism calls for us to judge each person individually based on that person's actions. If I wanted to succumb to the nonsense of bigotry, and it is nonsense, I got plenty of reasons to wear that shield of hate around me towards plenty of groups of people. I've talked about this before. But I'm not going to do that. See, you put a shell of hate around you, and you're bound to miss out on some really cool people. Some of them are white women. Like, for example, my camera lady, one of the best friends I've ever had. My life has benefited considerably from her friendship. Heck, she's even given me advice in these podcasts. Or my aforementioned shooting buddy from Oklahoma. It was he who turned me on to the benefits of Lake City brass, that military surplus stuff. Turns out that stuff is really consistent and really well made. He also he taught me about the benefits of bedding a rifle's action, by the way. Wouldn't learn any of those things if I'd had that no white guy's shell of hatred up. But they can't ever be liberals. They supported Mitt Romney instead of Barack Obama. Yes, I've heard that too, and it's wrong on two counts. First, not all white men supported Mitt Romney, so it's wrong on its face. That right there ought to be enough, but let's keep going. So, we get to the second count. Folks, remember the golden rule here. Follow it. Be nice. Mahatma Gandhi faced far, far worse than the vast majority of us here in this country ever faced or will face. At least those of us who are alive. He won those hearts and minds through acting according to the beliefs that he espoused. One of those beliefs was definitely not hatred. It was acceptance. I've seen the movie epic Gandhi. You know, the one where Ben Kingsley portrays the great Indian civil rights leader? It's said that this film was actually a pretty accurate portrayal of Mr. Gandhi. If so, then he welcomed anyone, including British people. Heck, including the South African whites who beat him up. And through his actions, he basically ended up shaming the British rulers into backing off. He did it through peace and acceptance. Years later, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would do the same thing here in this country. Oh, and former KKK Imperial Wizard Johnny Lee Clary, he's a white Southern boy who used to be a real Wayne nut, he talks about how one black preacher defeated the entire Klan, including Johnny Lee himself, by using his brains and the common humanity of all. And it worked. Mr. Clary now talks about that and how silly and ridiculous and dangerous the Klan is. He did a total 180. He's a totally different person now. And he talks about his past life as a warning to others. Don't be like I was. Now, folks, if being nice and coming from a position not mired in hatred for those other folks, and I'm talking to you, my fellow liberals, if that can turn around a KKK imperial wizard, don't you think it could possibly turn around someone less wingnut than that? I believe so. That's why I go to the gun shows as the San Francisco liberal with a gun. I've actually changed some hearts and minds that way, by simply being nice. By not going in with my dukes up, but rather my hand out to shake. It works. Now, some people you can't change, but some you can. And yep, I've learned some marksmanship and reloading tips from them in the process too. Gotta love that. I know, believe me, it's sometimes very, very tempting to bust out the claws and just go get them when some of the wingnuts say something stupid. You know, roar, yeah. But all that does is get them to shut you out and nothing goes anywhere. Here's what I do when I encounter such folks. I remember something very important. Their anger is really not at me personally. If I find that they're just too far gone, and some are, I politely excuse myself from the conversation, and that's the end of it. Some people just aren't in a place to hear something different from what they currently believe. But if I detect the potential for reasonable discussion, I stay cool and I find points of agreement. Generally, there's a point of agreement between any two people somewhere, just a matter of finding it. So far, I've had pretty good success with that. That's what I do with those gun shows. It's basically a form of what I do when I do my Second Amendment advocacy with the antis. I've talked about that previously, too, like when I was at this university here in Virginia. Well, if your goal is to belittle and defeat someone, again, I'm talking to you, my fellow liberals, if your goal is to belittle and defeat white men, I'd advise you to change your goal. be nice. If there is if there is any resistance there, then understand that resistance and have no expectations whatsoever of defeating them. That's not the proper goal. The win here is winning their hearts and minds. That's the real win. And that may happen years later, like it did with me in the Second Amendment. It may happen instantly, like it did with one fella I once knew from Tennessee. Or it may not happen at all. You got some diehards out there. But you got a way better chance if you follow that golden rule. I submit to you all that this is the really liberal way to deal with people, including white men. Do with them like you'd like them to do with you. And as a nice bonus, you may end up improving your marksmanship in the process. We'll be back after a short station ID break. Stay tuned.
Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
Mark, how are you, friend?
Hey, Doc Weston, how are you doing?
You're listening to the Barstool Discussion.
Welcome to Gunsmithing Radio with your host, Fred Zeglin.
You're listening to the Gun Review Podcast, a podcast that is made up entirely of gun reviews from the ordinary gun owner.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World Podcast.
This is Downrange Radio, and I'm your host, Michael Bain.
You are listening to the Personal Armament Podcast, Give Me Some Lumen Show. This is Rob Robidoux.
From the commander's chair of the Rolling Chicken Hammer Love Wagon Studio, it's the Road Gunner Podcast, coming at you with 80,000 pounds of concealed carry.
You're listening to Firearms Cafe. I'm your host, Tony Brown.
You're listening to the Gun Rights Advocates Podcast, and I am your host, Mark Vanderberg.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Quick Tip of the Week. I'm your host, Alex Addicks.
Live from sunny Live Oak, Florida, it's the Pro Arms Podcast.
Now, your host for the Politics and Guns Podcast, Paul Lathrop.
Hello and welcome to episode 206
of your weekly Gun Dudes Podcast.
Hello, gunslingers.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jim Fleming, and this is Reloading Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rimfire Podcast. My name is Ken Kowalski, and I'll be your host.
Shooting the Breeze, the formal gun podcast of WaltNPA.com. I am Walt White.
This is Doc Wesson, and in this episode of the Gun Nation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Armed Citizen Podcast. I'm your host, Mick McCart.
Welcome to the Survival Gun Show. My name is Chip Monk, and I'm your humble correspondent.
Every show on the Gun Rights Radio Network gets support from the network in one form or another, and the network needs your support to keep bringing you these podcasts. Please consider going to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and becoming a subscriber to the network. A subscription is only $2 a month and does things like helping pay for servers and bandwidth. From time to time, the network receives donated products it uses to give away to subscribers, and this year it has an amazing prize to be awarded to one lucky subscriber. The Masada Yub Group has donated an $800 Mag 40 class to be given away, and all you have to do to be eligible to win the drawing is to be a subscriber to the network. More details to be released soon on the drawing and other prizes. So don't wait. Head over to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and become a subscriber now to be sure you're eligible to win this fantastic training opportunity.
We're back. We just got through talking about what I believe a very important aspect of liberalism is. We're talking about the golden rule. I said early on in starting these podcasts that we'd be talking about aspects of liberalism quite a bit. Now let's talk about the right to keep and bear arms. Folks, it's story time. I'm going to tell you a story. It's about the Second Amendment's importance. It's about an old man who walked slowly through some dry fallen leaves of autumn, his practiced eye automatically choosing the bare and stony places in the trail for his feet. Yeah, there was scarcely a sound as he passed, though his left knee was stiff with scar tissue. He grunted occasionally as the tight sinews pulled. Damn chainsaw, he thought. Behind him, the boy shuffled along, trying to imitate his grandfather, but was unable to mimic the silent motion that the old man had learned during countless winter days upon this wooded mountain in pursuit of game. He's 15 years old, the old man thought. Plenty old enough to be learning. But that was another time, another America. His mind drifted. He saw himself, a 15-year-old boy, following in the footsteps of his own grandfather, clutching a 12-gauge in his trembling hands as they tracked a wounded whitetail. The leg was hurting worse now, and he slowed his pace a bit. Plenty of time. Should have been my own son here with me now, the old man thought sadly. But Jason had no interest, no understanding. He cared for nothing but pounding on the keys of that damn computer terminal. He knew nothing about the woods or where food came from, or freedom. And that's my fault, isn't it? The old man stopped and held up his hand, motioning for the boy to look. In the small clearing ahead, the deer stood motionless, watching them. It was a scraggly buck, underfed and sickly, but the boy's eyes lit up with excitement. It had been many years since they had seen even a single whitetail here on the mountain. After the hunting had stopped, the population had exploded. The deer had eaten the mountain almost bare until erosion had become a serious problem in some places. That following winter, three starving does had wandered into the old man's yard, trying to eat the bark off of his pecan trees, and he had wished the animal rights fanatics could have been there then. It was against the law, but, well, the old man knew a higher law, and he took an axe in the yard and he killed the starving beasts. They did not have the strength to run. The buck finally turned and loped away, and they continued down the trail to the river. When they came to the big oak, the old man turned and pushed through the heavy brush beside the trail, and the boy followed wordlessly. The old man knew that Thomas was curious about their leaving the trail, but the boy had learned to move silently. Well, almost. And that meant no talking. When they came to Coffin Rock, the old man sat down upon it and motioned for the boy to join him.
"You see this rock shaped like a casket?" the old man asked.
"Yes, sir," the old man smiled. You know, the boy was respectful and polite. He loved the outdoors, too. Everything a man could ask in a grandson. Or a son.
"I want you to remember this place and what I'm about to tell you. A lot of it isn't going to make any sense to you, but it's important, and one day you'll understand it well enough."
The old man paused. Now that he was here, he didn't really know where to start.
"Before you were born," he began at last, "this country was different. I've told you about hunting, how everybody who obeyed the law could own guns. Man could speak out anywhere without worrying about whether he'd get back home or not. School was different, too. Man could send his kids to a church school or a private school or even teach them at home. But even in the public schools, they didn't spend all their time trying to brainwash you like they do at yours now."
The old man paused and was silent for many minutes. The boy was still, watching a chipmunk scavenging beside a fallen tree below them.
"Things don't ever happen all at once, boy. They just sort of sneak up on you. Sure, we knew guns were important. We just didn't think it would ever happen in America. But we had to do something about crime, they said. It was a crisis. Everything was a crisis. It was a drug crisis or a terrorism crisis or street crime or gang crime. Even a health care crisis was an excuse to take away a little more of our rights."
The old man turned to look at his grandson.
"They ever let you read a thing called the Constitution down there at your school?"
The boy solemnly shook his head.
"Well, the Fourth Amendment's still in there. It says there won't be any unreasonable searches and seizures. It says you're safe in your own home."
The old man shrugged.
"That had to go. It was a crisis. They could kick your door open any time, day or night. Come in with guns blazing if they thought you had drugs. Or, later, guns. Oh, at first it was just registration. To keep the guns out of the hands of criminals. Well, that didn't work, of course. Then later when they wanted to take them, they knew where to look. They banned assault rifles and then sniper rifles and Saturday night specials. Everything you saw on the TV or in the movies was against us. God knows the news people were. And the schools were teaching our kids that nobody needed guns anymore. We tried to take a stand, but we felt like the whole face of our country had changed and we were left outside. Me and a friend of mine, when we saw what was happening, we came and built a secret place up here on the mountain. A place where we could put our guns until we needed them. We figured someday Americans would remember what it was like to be free and what kind of price we had to pay for that freedom. So we hid our guns instead of losing them. One fellow I knew disagreed. He said we ought to use our guns now and stand up to the government. Said that the colonists had fought for their freedom when the British tried to disarm them at Lexington and Concord. Well, he and a lot of others died in what your history books call the Tax Revolt of 1998. But, son, it wasn't the revolt that caused the repeal of the Second Amendment like your history book says. Second Amendment was already gone long before they ever repealed it. The rest of us thought we were doing the right thing by waiting. I hope to God we were right.
You see, Thomas, it isn't government that makes a man free. In the end, governments always do just the opposite. They gobble up freedom like hungry pigs. You have to have laws to keep the worst of men under control, yes. But at the same time, the people have to have guns, too, in order to keep the government itself under control. In our country, the people were supposed to be the final authority of the law, but that was a long time ago. Once the guns were gone, there was no reason for those who run the government to give a damn about laws and constitutional rights and such. They just did what they pleased and anyone spoke out. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. It took a long time to collect up all the millions of firearms that were in private hands. The government created a whole new agency to see to it. There were rewards for turning in your friends, too. Drug dealers and murderers were set free after 2 or 3 years in prison, but possession of a gun would get you mandatory life behind bars with no parole. I don't know how they found out about me. Probably knew I'd been a hunter all those years, or maybe somebody turned me in. They picked me up on suspicion and took me down to the federal building. Son, those guys did everything they could think of to me. Kept me locked up in this little room for hours. No food, no water. They kept coming and asking me where the guns were. What guns? I said. Whenever I doze off, they come crashing in, yelling and hollering. I got to where I didn't know which end was up. I'd say I wanted my lawyer, and they'd laugh. Lawyers are for criminals, they said. You'll get a lawyer after we get the guns. What's so funny is, I know they thought they were doing the right thing. They were fighting crime. When I got home, I found Ruth sitting in the middle of the living room floor, crying her eyes out. The house was a shambles. While I was down there, they'd come out and took our house apart. Didn't need a search warrant, they said. National emergency. Gun crisis. Your grandma tried to call our preacher, and they ripped the phone off the wall. Told her they'd go easy on me if she just told them where I kept my guns. The old man laughed. She told him to go to hell. He stared into the distance for a moment as his laughter faded. They wouldn't tell her about me, where I was or anything, that whole time. She said that she thought I was dead. She never got over that day, and she died the next December. They've been watching me ever since, off and on. I guess there's not much for them to do anymore, now that all the guns are gone. Plenty of time to watch one foolish old man. He paused. Beside him, the boy stared at the stone beneath his feet. Anyway, I figure that one day America will come to her senses. Our men will need those guns, and they'll be ready. We cleaned them and sealed them up good. They'll last for years. Maybe it won't be in your lifetime, Thomas. Maybe one day you'll be sitting here with your son or grandson. Tell them about me, boy. Tell them about the way I said America used to be. The old man stood, his bad leg shaking unsteadily beneath him. You see the way this stone points? You follow that line 100 feet down the hill, and you'll find a big, round rock. It looks like it's buried solid, but one man with a good pry bar can lift it, and there's a concrete tunnel right under there that goes back into the hill. The old man stood, watching as the sun eased toward the ridge, coloring the sky and the world red. Below them, the river still splashed among the stones as it had for 1 million years. It's still going, the old man thought. There'll be someone left to carry on for me when I'm gone. It was harder to walk back. He felt old and purposeless now, and it would be easier, he knew, to give in to that aching heaviness in his left lung that had begun to trouble him more and more. Damn cigarettes, he thought. His leg hurt. The boy silently came up beside him, supported him as they started down the last mile toward the house. How quiet he walks, the old man thought. He's learned well. It was almost dark when the boy walked in. His father looked up from his paper. Did you and your granddad have a nice walk? Yes, the boy answered, opening the refrigerator. You can call Agent Goodwin tomorrow. Gramps finally showed me where it is. This story is called Sundown at Coffin Rock and written by Raymond K. Patton. It was first published in the 1990s in Dillon Precision's magazine Blue Press. The story is fictional, but it's nonetheless a warning to us all. If we, the people, don't stand up for our rights and actually hold our elected officials accountable, and that means voting them out or even jail sentences when they violate our Constitution, then things will never get better. And I think we all agree they do need to get better. You say you're liberals? Okay, what will you do? A little something for you to think about. This is Cowboy T signing off until next time. Until then, safe shooting, and thanks for listening.